welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. For an hour of adventure, we'll visit a strange new world later in this hour on The Mysterious Traveler, but right now, adventure in the Old West on Escape. It's Joel Murcutt's story, Sundown, from June 23rd, 1950, on CBS.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape.
Tonight, we escape to the Old West in the story of a boy who never owned anything but a gun. As Joel Murcutt tells it in his exciting tale, Sundown.
The sun is kissing the top of the mountains, and in a minute the shadows will start to sneak along the street. It's sundown, and you can't do nothing to stop it. Everybody knows that. That's why the town looks like a ghost town. Not a horse nor a rider in sight, not even a tumbleweed. Oh, there's folks around, all right, looking out from door cracks and windows. And now the street ain't empty no more. Here's what they've been waiting for. There's Kirby Hunsaker coming out of the saloon at one end of the town, and there's Ben Ford coming from a liver stable at the other end. Both of them walking towards each other slow, right hands hanging like claws, an inch from the gun holsters. In a minute, one of them will be dead. Kirby Hunsaker or Ben Ford? Little Ben. Nothing but a baby when I picked him up off of the desert 15 years ago. Hold up a minute, Sam.
What is it?
Over there, a dried out hole, see it?
Yeah, looks like a man.
Let's have a look.
Yeah, it's a man right enough, or what's left of him.
Oh. He's come a long way for water. Come to the wrong place. Give me a hand with him.
You alive?
I don't know. Well, he's alive. Canting.
Here, friend. Swig this.
You better hold it to him.
Huh?
Son's got his eyes. He's blind.
Oh.
Drink you. Drink just a little bit of it. Oh, ain't gonna help him much. Burn clean through.
Yeah.
That better?
Thanks.
My wife. And my kid?
Yeah, where they at?
Back there. Where I left the wagon. Animals died. I came for water.
Better give him some more, Dan.
No, he don't need it no more. All we can do is find his wife and kid, if there's anything left to find. There was something left. A sun-baked wagon in the midst of that hellish inferno, a dead woman and a kid. 5-year-old boy. His face is burned, his lips is cracked with fever, but his eyes stared out across that desert like they was following some nightmare that nobody else could see. He didn't cry, he didn't whimper, he didn't talk. We gave him water and he took it. Wasn't no place to send him, and he just stood there watching us as we buried his mother.
Well, what do we do about him?
A kid? Take him with us, I reckon. Ain't much else we can do.
Well, ain't nobody on the ranch to take care of him.
No, ain't nobody here neither. He's like a little cactus, Sam. He'll grow or he'll die. He grew. Big, raw-boned kid, and by the time he was 12, he could handle a man's work. And I had a feeling for him, a feeling like he was my own. A feeling that could make me hurt when I looked at him.
Dan?
Yeah, Ben?
Do I have any money?
Well, yeah, I reckon you have. You work for your keep.
How much do I have, Dan?
Well, now, I don't know. It takes some figuring. But this is your home, boy. Everything that's here is yours.
Do I have have enough to buy a horse.
Why, I reckon so.
Then I want my own horse.
See. All right, boy. Take your pick.
That three-year-old black with a star on his face. I want him.
All right. You just bought yourself a horse. Yeah, he'd bought himself a horse, but it was more than that to him. It meant he had something that was his, come flood or thunder, something in the world that belonged to him and not to nobody else. It gave him a reason for being alive, and he started to build his life around that black horse. No horse ever got care like that. Ben had had the horse for almost a year when Kirby Hunsaker came. He rode in one afternoon while me and Sam was down at the corral. Ben was in town with a buckboard picking up supplies when Hunsaker rode in, just pounding leather.
Well, Mark. Well. Howdy.
Howdy.
Your horse looks like he could use a rest, Ranger.
Need shoeing. He'd be all right. I'll trade him and cash for a fresh horse.
Ain't nobody gonna ride a horse of mine that way.
Maybe you didn't hear me. I said I'm going to trade him. That means I'm going to trade him. My name's Kirby Hunsaker.
He said the name like it should mean something, and it did. Kirby Hunsaker, a name that was drifting all over the West with a trail of blood behind it. Stagecoach drivers and travelers carried it on their tongues, and he knew it. He had a face like a woman and eyes like a steel trap, and there wasn't no glove on his right hand. It was brown and weathered from sun and wind, and it hung close to his right side like a claw, never more than an inch from the butt of his gun. A gunfighter.
If you're thinking it over, you're wasting my time.
Better do it, Dan.
All right, Hunsaker.
I'll take the black with the star on his face. Put a rope on him. I said put a rope on him.
Not that one. He ain't mine.
I ain't asking whose he is. Put a rope on him.
Any other horse, anyone you want, even Trey.
Get that horse and keep your hand away from that gun.
Dan, do what he says. You can give young Ben the Palomino. He's just a kid, and a horse is a horse. He'll forget about it.
No, he won't, Sam. He won't never forget it.
Pronto, friend. Put a rope on that black, pronto.
There wasn't nothing else to do. Hunsaker saddled Ben's horse and just lit out down the trail. Me and Sam just stood there. We were still standing there when Ben brought the buckboard back from town. I watched his eyes go to the corral like they always did, and then he turned and looked at me and Sam like we was a firing squad.
Where's my horse, Dan?
I told him. His face was like stone, but there was a change in his eyes. They got back that same look they had the day I picked him up half dead on the desert. Lost and robbed and helpless.
You let him take my horse.
Well, that Palomino's worth twice as much, boy.
Not to me, Dan. The Palomino ain't mine.
Yes, he is. Because I'm giving him to you.
I don't want him. I want my own horse.
Hey, simmer down, boy. You come back
let
here.
Let him go, Sam. Let him go. He'll cool off. We might as well unload this here buckboard.
All right, I'll drive her on up the house.
Get up there, boy.
Hey, Ben. Ben, wait. Hey,
that fool kid ain't even using a saddle.
Crazy. He's going after Hunsaker. What? Hurry up, Sam. Saddle up. Hurry up.
He was riding hard and light, and we was distance before we even got started, but we followed the cloud of dust that trailed after him. Then sundown hit, and he was lost somewheres in the night.
There ain't much chance to find him now, unless he stops and strikes fire.
He won't stop. Yeah, be a moon pretty quick.
Hey, wait, listen.
Yeah, it's a horse. Oh. Must be over at the edge of that ridge.
Hey, let's take a look. A horse, all right.
Looks like the roan the kid was riding.
Something else there, too, on the ground.
We rode up. There was another horse on the ground. And in the light of the moon, I could see the white star on its black face. Ben was sitting on the ground beside it. A few feet away was the body of a man. I rolled it over, face up. It was an Indian. There was a bullet hole in his head.
What happened, Ben?
I don't know. This is the way I found him.
What's wrong with Star, Ben?
His leg's broken.
Oh. Or I must have stepped in a chuck hole.
Yeah. Then the Indian come by and Hunsaker give him a bullet in exchange for his horse.
Huh?
Tracks in the dirt there.
It's a good thing the boy didn't catch up with him.
Yeah, it is. That's a bad break he's got there, boy.
I know.
Ain't nothing you can do for him.
I know.
Well, now, why don't you just ride on back to the ranch of Sam?
Yeah.
I'll stay here for a while and catch up with you later.
You don't have to do that. Lend me your gun.
Oh, now, look, boy, let's ride off, you and me.
No! He's my horse, Dan, and I've got the right to shoot him.
Yeah, Ben, I reckon you have. Here's my gun. Come on, boy.
I'm coming.
Well, me and Sam will walk off a little ways, Ben. Give you a chance to just fall if you want to. Get it off of your chest.
I'm ready to ride with you. I ain't gonna cry, Dan.
He didn't cry. He hadn't cried when I picked him up off of the desert, and he didn't cry then. But the tears was inside of him someplace where they couldn't get out. Never showed in his eyes, though. Something else showed there instead. It was hate. A hate like a pure white flame. I could see it burning there when we got back to the ranch that night.
What'd you say his name was, Dan?
Who's that? Whose name?
The man who took Star.
Hannigan, I think. Yeah, Jim Hannigan.
That isn't what you said before, Dan. I want to know.
Hunziker. Kirby Hunziker.
You better go in and get some sleep, boy.
Ben, you can have your pick of anything in the corral.
I don't want another horse.
Well, when you see something that you do want, you just holler it's yours. That's a promise.
Anything, Dan?
Anything.
All right, then. I'll take your gun.
My gun?
You promised, Dan.
I promise. Here. It's yours.
Good night, Dan.
Good night, Ben.
Why, in all my days, I never heard it's a lame brain thing. It's giving a kid like that a gun.
Now, he'd have got one somewhere sooner or later. And if I know him right, it best to be soon.
Oh, he's only a boy.
13. He'll get to be a man fast in the next few years.
And we can hope for him to get better sense.
You're just wasting your hopes, Sam. I'm turning mine the other way. I'm hoping that Kirby Hunziker don't never come back here. A boy and a gun. They were together night and day. Ben kept it with him in his sleep, not under the pillow, but next to his cheek, and you could see the red marks of the barrel on the side of his face when he'd get up in the morning. Rest of the time, it was belted around him. And when he wasn't working, he'd go off alone into the hills for target practice, and the target he used was an express company reward poster for Kirby Hunziker. After the shots were all hitting the target, hitting close and fast, he stopped firing and was off on something else, the draw. I'd catch him at it in the house or in the barn, wherever he thought he was alone. He started to wear his belt different, too, with the gun holster tied low on his right hip and his right hand hung by his side like a claw. And it got more claw-like with the passing years. Rest of him had changed, too. He wasn't a boy no more. He was a man. We heard about Kirby Hunziker more and more we heard about him. His name had gotten big since he took a kid's horse. Got to be one of the three names mentioned most when the talk in the saloons turned to gunslingers. Jim Dunn, Boaz Watson, and Kirby Hunziker. Killers for hire for any dirty job outside of the law. But all jealous of each other. All bound to meet someday and find out who'd be just a flick faster on the draw. And Ben had to be there the night a stray cowpuncher stopped in to rest his horse.
More coffee, stranger?
Thanks, sir. Reckon I will.
Watered your horse. Sure needed it. You must have come a long way.
Yeah, from Goldfield. Been riding lucky, though. I come through Flagstaff just in time to see the fight.
What fight?
You mean you ain't heard about it? I must have been riding faster than I thought. You ought to have seen it. Never was a gunfight like it.
Who was in it?
Two of the best. Big Jim Dunn and Kirby Hunziker.
Ben grabbed the edge of the table and his face got as white as borax. Like a lead bullet, it hit him in the guts.
Which one of them got it?
I prayed for the right answer. The answer that would have been right for me, not the one Ben wanted.
Oh, Hunziker beat him. Dunn never cleared his holster.
Color come back into Ben's face, and that pure white flame of hate burned in his eyes again.
Hunziker got the draw on Big Jim Dunn?
Oh, yeah. I wish I could have stayed in Flagstaff. Boaz Watson someplace in the territory, too, and as soon as he gets wind of it, he'll be on Hunziker's trail for a showdown.
Well, if Dunn never cleared his holster, then the man ain't born that can outdraw Hunziker.
Boaz Watson thinks he can. He's been itching for the chance.
It's a chance he ain't gonna get.
Ben. Ben, where are you going to?
Just thought I'd take a little ride, Dan.
Flagstaff?
Flagstaff, Dan. And don't try to stop me.
Trying to stop him would have been like trying to stop an avalanche, but he couldn't stop me from following, neither. He rode day and night, trading mounts on the way, and I was an hour behind him when he reached Flagstaff on the third morning of his ride and started his hunt. He tried the hotel, the express office, and one by one the saloons, asking the questions and seeing faces go blank. He was easy to find when I got to town. He left a trail of questions behind him, and I found him in the last saloon on the street, still asking.
Did you hear what I asked you, bartender?
Yeah. Yeah, I heard. How should I know?
Does he ever come in here?
Well, I just serve drinks. I don't watch who comes and goes.
I'm tired of walking and I'm tired of talking. I want an answer.
Well, I reckon he comes in sometimes.
When?
Usually about an hour from now.
Good. I'll wait.
Gonna buy me a drink, Ben?
If that's what you came for, Dan.
Been rough trailing you, boy. Men and horses ain't meant to be pushed that hard.
I was in a hurry.
Well, maybe we can take it easier going back. Maybe if we left right now, we could camp out someplace tonight like we used to.
Ask me later, Dan. This is something I gotta do first.
He wouldn't drink and he wouldn't leave. He just stood there waiting, looking at nothing. He might have been carved out of rock. There wasn't a nerve in him. And then I heard the door swing the way it had a couple of times before, only this time it was different. The talk around the table's cut out, the bartender's hands tightened around the glass he'd been wiping. Every head in the place turned towards the door. It was Kirby Hunziker. I knew that face. It'd grown heavier and crueler, but I knew it. He stood there in the doorway while them bear trap eyes of his searched the room, moving first from gun belt to gun belt, flicking an extra bead on the ones that hung low, looking for the hands without gloves. Then his glance come up to face level, like a assayer examining ore. Well, him and Ben hadn't never seen each other before, but somehow they knew each other. Their eyes caught and held like two longhorns locked together.
I hear somebody's looking for me. In case anybody don't know me, name's Kirby Hunziker.
I'm looking for you.
Speak your piece.
A long time ago, when I couldn't do anything about it, you stole a horse from me.
You called me a horse thief?
You ran him into a chuck hole and you left him with a broken leg. I had to shoot him.
You got nerve. Name your price. I might pay it.
You'll pay it. My price is the life of the man who stole that horse.
You got a gun. Dig for it.
You move first, Hunziker.
I'm giving you an edge. Better take it.
No. I want to give you a little time, Hunziker. If I draw first, then you got to move without thinking. But I want you to think. I want you to think and decide and worry.
You're talking big. A little too big.
I want to give you time. Like you gave it to a horse with a broken leg. Because you won't draw fast enough, Hunziker. Not even if you move first. I'm going down to the livery stable to take a nap. At sundown, I'm coming back up the street and I don't want anybody on it. You better shoot me in the back while I'm going out that door, because if you don't, I'm going to kill you, Hunziker.
The flame was in Hunziker's eyes, too. But it was a man's hate, not pure and white, but diluted with the memory of the way Ben's gun hung, and diluted with just a shadow of fear. Ben went back and slept, like he said. I sat beside him for the best part of an hour. Then I shook him. Kind of gentle. Sun's hanging pretty low, Ben. Just about time to get up and wash.
Why don't you start for home, Dan? I'll catch up to you later.
Well, I thought that I'd wait up at the hotel.
All right, Dan. See you later.
Yeah, man. I'll see you later. So here I am, in the window of the hotel, and yonder he is in the street, him and Kirby Hunsaker, walking towards each other. And the town is so quiet you can hear their steps on the boardwalk. The fingers of the right hand is clawed like hooks, almost touching the gun butts. Don't even seem like the sun is moving anymore. Like even the shadows is glued there on the ground waiting for one of them hands to move. Because when it comes, it'll come fast.
Better dig, Hunsaker.
You punk.
I'm going to collect for that horse.
Dirty little...
That's your receipt, Hunsaker.
Ben, are you all right, boy?
I'm all right. Let's walk.
It's all over now, boy. Let's saddle up and go on home.
Hey, wait.
It's a blacksmith. Guess the horses are ready.
Express rider came in just after you left before. Boys, Watson is riding in. He met him on the trail. You gonna stay and meet him?
Me? I got no quarrel with Boaz Watson.
Well, looks like you will have. He was mighty keen on meeting up with Hunsaker. Looks like you've taken over Hunsaker's place.
You'd better go in alone, Dan.
What? What do you mean, Ben?
I killed Hunsaker. Now every gunslinger looking for a reputation will try to get it by killing me. From now on, I gotta fight or run.
Well, I'll stay with you. I've been holed up in one place too long anyhow.
No, Dan. This is where we got to split. Right now. Thanks for everything. I'll never forget you. Goodbye, Dan.
Goodbye, Ben. Goodbye, boy. Goodbye, son. Yeah, he's a gunfighter now. A gunslinging madman will see to that. But he won't never be an outlaw like Kirby Hunsaker or Boaz Watson or Jim Dunn. He'll kill if they force him to it. But ain't nobody never gonna buy his gun for killing. Because he's got to own something. Desert took his family. I couldn't make up for him. Kirby Hunsaker took his horse. And he'll never really own another one. But there's one thing he's got in this world. That gun. That gun is his. He owns it.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. And tonight has presented Sundown by Joel Murcott.
Escape on Tuned To Yesterday from June 23rd, 1950 on CBS, starring radio regulars Barton Yarborough, Paul Frees, and John Daner, and often Broadway actor Will Gear. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned To Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levinier, and now time for The Mysterious Traveler with the Robert A. Arthur story, Strange New World, True Adventure, coming up in this next half hour.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan, and starring two of radio's foremost actors, Clifford Carpenter and Lawson Zerbe, in Strange New World. This is The Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we follow two young flyers on a routine flight which suddenly deviated from normal and brought them to a strange new world. Well, our story begins aboard His Majesty's ship, the submarine Valiant, somewheres in the vast Pacific. Captain Farnsworth, commander of the Valiant, makes his way along the narrow passageway of the submarine to the sick bay and steps into the small cabin.
No. No, Pete, no. You're wrong. Wing flaps are down. Well, we're going to hit Pete. What?
How is he, Higgins?
He's not too good, sir. Lord knows how many days he was adrift on that life raft.
Did you find any identification on him?
Oh, yes, sir. His dog tags. Here they are, sir.
Thank you. Daniel Walker, Lieutenant, United States Air Force.
Of course, sir. I knew from his lingo, sir, he was an American.
That's quite so, quite so. Well, Higgins, you'll have to do what you can for him until we reach a ship with the doctor.
Aye, sir.
Pete, where am I?
I think he's coming out of it, Captain.
Yes.
Who are you?
Lie quietly, Lieutenant. I'm Captain Farnsworth, His Majesty's Navy. You're aboard the submarine Valiant. We picked you up an hour ago.
Pete, the island.
I take it you were forced down while flying, Lieutenant. And what happened?
Happened?
Yes.
Pete Mendez and myself were flying a C-47 from Honolulu to Japan. There were only the two of us. Pete was the pilot. I was holding down co-pilot. We were attached to air transport and had aboard a cargo of medical supplies. We were 6 hours out of Honolulu, and I'd taken over the controls. Pete was relaxing in his seat, chewing on a chocolate bar.
And where's the newspaper we picked up in Honolulu, Junior?
Right behind you.
Oh, yeah, here it is.
Now, what's the good news?
They exploded another atomic bomb in Los Alamos.
Oh, yeah? Anything else of interest?
Isn't that enough?
Hey, what are you doing? I haven't seen that paper yet.
I'm sorry.
What are you getting so worked up about? What's one atomic explosion? More or less.
Oh, you're just a kid, wet behind the ears.
Okay, Pop, relax.
I was there when the first one was used.
Where?
Hiroshima.
Oh, well, I didn't know that.
There's a lot you don't know, Junior.
Yeah, well, give me a chance, will you? You weren't on the plane that actually dropped it, were you?
No, I was piloting one of the escorts.
It must have been quite a sight.
Yeah. I hope I never live to see another one.
Yeah.
Now, look at those clouds ahead. We may be in for a rough trip, Junior. Better let me take over.
Pete, look at our rate of speed. 125 miles an hour.
Yeah. This typhoon we're bucking must be hitting peaks of 150 an hour. We're right in the center of it.
Wide open?
Wide open.
How about turning back?
I can't. We're an hour past point of return.
We've been taking this beating for hours. When's it going to let up?
That's hard to say. The worst typhoon I've ever seen.
Look at the compass, completely haywire. Any idea where we are?
No, not anymore.
How long do you think we can take this?
What I'm worried about is the gas. We're running low.
Yeah, how much we got left?
2 hours. Two and a half at the most.
Well, that means we're going to have to sit down and a drink.
Yeah. Our one hope is that this lets up and we find a ship to sit down there. You better prepare a life raft. Stock it with plenty of water and rations.
Okay. I'll take care of it right away.
Well, looks as though we've come through it.
Yeah.
Well, that was one to tell your grandchildren about. There go the engines. Okay, Junior, get back to the raft. Be ready to launch it when we hit.
All right, Pete. Put it down nice and easy.
Those are my intentions, Junior.
What's the altitude?
1,600. 14.
Water rough?
Well, not too bad. 800. 600. 4. Wing flaps are down. Get ready with the hatch, Junior.
Right.
We're down to 100. Hang on.
You okay, Dad?
Yeah. Now, but you're still going fast. Here, give me a hand with the raft.
Right.
There sure is a lot of water out there.
I climb in, will you?
Huh? Oh, yeah.
That's... Okay, let's shove off. So far, so good.
We shoved off into a sea that was running plenty high. In a few minutes, the waves carried us off and the sinking plane was lost to sight. Pete rigged up a distress flag so we could be more easily spotted, and then we settled back to wait. For two nights and one day, we drifted in a fast-running sea with a heavy overcast. There wasn't a sign of a plane or ship. By the dawn of the second day, the overcast lifted and the sea became calmer. It was around noontime that Pete spotted the island. We rigged up a small sail and began paddling for it.
Do you recognize the island, Pete? Have you any idea which one it is?
No. Your guess is as good as mine. Looks fairly big.
Yeah.
Hey, look. The channel through the reef and into the lagoon is directly ahead. The tide is helping to carry us in.
Good. Sure we want to end up on those reefs.
Brother, we're really moving.
Yeah, another minute or two and we'll hit the beach.
You think there might be some natives on the island?
There should be. Certainly looks big enough.
I don't see any huts or anything.
No. Hold on, we're going to hit the beach. Yeah. Well, that does it. Hop out and give me a hand. Let's drag it out of the water.
Yeah. Right. That sure feels good to be able to walk.
All right, pull.
Okay.
That's it.
A little more.
Okay.
There.
Hey, look at those coconuts.
Yeah. Let's begin looking the island over, Junior. See if we can find any natives.
Pete took some food and a canteen of water from the raft, and we started walking along the beach, now and then cutting inland to look for water. It took us 6 hours to walk around the island, and the sun was just setting as we got back to the life raft.
Sit down, Junior. Take a load off your feet.
Well, I don't mind if I do. Cigarette?
Yeah, thanks.
Well, we found fresh water. Signs that natives had once lived here, but they sure aren't here anymore.
No. That's strange, considering the island is 3 miles wide, almost 2 miles long. I've seen natives living on islands one half the size. I wonder why they left.
Got any ideas?
No.
Well, it's just you and me. Sit tight and lead the rifle for Riley that we're picked up.
Yeah. And the first thing we'll do in the morning is run up a distress signal on one of the palm trees. We'll also get brush together for a fire.
Check. What do you say we have supper and turn in? It's been a long day.
Okay, Junior. Sounds like a good idea.
Pete. Pete, wake up.
Huh? What? Oh, what time is it?
2 a.m.
2 a.m.? What are you waking me for? Go to sleep.
Pete, I heard something moving around in the brush inland.
You're probably wild pigs. Island's full of them. Go to sleep.
It made too much noise for a pig.
Oh, holy smoke, Junior. It certainly wasn't an elephant.
Well, maybe not, but... Do you hear that?
Yeah. I heard.
Does that sound like a pig in the brush?
Ah, maybe there's a herd of them.
Who's kidding who?
Okay. Okay, wait till I get my 45. All right, come on. Let's have a look. And step lightly.
Sounds as if it's over that way.
Yeah. And listen to that. It almost does sound like an elephant.
Look, the moon's coming out behind those clouds. That's a break.
Yeah, and we're getting closer. Yeah, we better take it easy.
The sound of it, that 45 of yours isn't going to do much good.
Yeah, I got the feeling I'm dreaming all this. I've been on dozens of tropical islands like this one. Biggest thing you'll find on any of them are wild pigs.
That's no wild pig, brother.
Yeah. That's why this seems like a dream. What in the devil could it be?
You see anything yet?
No. Look out for those palm leaves. They're sharp.
Yeah, okay.
Listen to that. Good Lord. Look.
It was like a nightmare. A nightmare you can't escape from, try as you will. There, 50 yards away in a clearing in the underbrush, was a monster. A monster that baffled the eye and brain for a moment, then began to come into focus and take shape. What I saw before me was a water crab, only 100 times larger than the crabs that scurried along the beach. The monster crab in the clearing stood fully 20 feet high, with legs the thickness of palm tree trunks. The antenna on its frightening head was yards long, and its eyes were unbearably evil, even from a distance. Its 12 legs carried it slowly but lightly through the underbrush.
Don't move, Dan. We don't want to attract its attention.
Pete, what is it?
I don't know. It's a crab of some sort. Only 100 times larger than any I've ever seen.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, the size of it. It must be at least 18 feet high. And those claws.
You could park a car under its belly. I can't believe it. It's moving off.
Yeah.
Do you think there may be others like it around?
I don't know. I hope not.
Look, it's moving toward the beach.
Yeah, I see it. Yet I still can't believe it.
Maybe it's an hallucination.
Both of us having the same hallucination, hardly.
Well, how do you account for it?
I can't.
It's on the beach going into the water.
Yeah. There it goes.
God.
Look. We better stay here, Junior, and just sit tight for the rest of the night. Well, it's good to see daylight again.
Yeah.
Let's take a walk over to that clearing in the underbrush. Where we saw it, huh?
Okay.
And what do you think about it?
Well, I don't know. Well, maybe what we saw was just a fluke of nature. It's possible.
Yes. Possible.
Yeah, what other explanation can there be?
I've got one. But it's so incredible.
Well, let's have it.
I'll tell you later. I want to think about it some more.
Well, here we are. Here's the clearing.
Yeah. We first saw it by those palm trees over there. Look.
Tracks of the monster in the sand.
Look how large and deep the tracks are.
Yeah. It was a beautiful morning. Until now.
Come on. Let's follow him.
Okay.
We go through the brush here and towards the beach.
Yeah. This is the way we saw it go.
Oh, the brush is flattened as though a tank had rolled through here.
Sure, no problem following it.
Look. This is where it came out on the beach.
Yeah, and there are the tracks on the sand leading into the water.
It's out there. Somewhere. In the waters of the lagoon.
Yeah.
Look.
Let's unload the raft and then paddle out into the lagoon.
What for? Holy smokes, don't tell me you're going looking for that monster.
Well, not exactly, but I got a hunch. And I want to check on it.
It's crazy paddling out into that lagoon. How do you know it won't attack once we get out there?
I don't. It's just a chance we'll have to take.
But why?
So that I can find the answer to all this. Are you going with me?
Okay. I'm going with you. But, Pete, for an hour I've been paddling you across the lagoon. All you've been doing is peering down into the water. Are they trying to spot the monster?
No.
Well, if it isn't a monster you're looking for, what then?
Stop paddling. I think we found it.
Found what?
Take a look over the side. Into the water.
I don't see a thing.
Oh, the sun's been in your eyes. Keep looking towards the bottom. Till your eyes get used to the water.
I don't see it. But wait a minute. I can hardly make it out, but there seems to be a wreck on the bottom. A big one.
It is a wreck. That's a battleship you see on the bottom.
A battleship?
Yeah, don't you understand? This island. It's Bikini.
Bikini? You mean where they dropped an atomic bomb on those old battleships?
Yeah, a dozen ships on the bottom here. All sunk by atomic bomb tests.
Bikini? Pete, you don't think the island's radioactive, do you?
Well, not enough to do us any harm. It's been years since the test.
You said you had a crazy explanation for that monster we saw last night. Does that tie in with all this?
Yeah.
How?
Now, look, you'll think I'm nuts, but here goes. We dropped a bomb into this lagoon to see what an underwater explosion would do to those warships.
Now, what are you getting at?
We know what the atomic bomb did to the ships. But do we know what effect it had on the fish life here in the lagoon?
Are you saying that the monster crab we saw last night was the result of the bomb dropped into this lagoon?
Well, what other explanation can there be? Remember, Dan, the effect of the bomb on the survivors of Hiroshima left wounds and illnesses that doctors had never seen before. Now, who's to say that the radioactivity in this lagoon couldn't have caused fish life to multiply in size 100-fold?
It can't be. It just can't be.
Well, why not?
Radioactivity causing a crab to grow 1,000 times bigger?
Well, how else can you account for that monster crab we saw last night?
I don't know.
Well, think about it. Meanwhile, let's paddle back to the beach.
The two of us paddle silently across the lagoon to the beach and drag the raft out of the water. Time and time again, I found myself turning to look out over the waters of the lagoon as Pete's words ran through my mind. His explanation seemed an impossible one, and yet, well, what other answer could there be? The two of us sat on the beach smoking, watching the moon come up over the lagoon of Bikini.
Sure is a beautiful night.
Yeah. You think they'll send search planes this way, Pete?
Well, sooner or later, they'll find us. As long as we have fresh water and fish, we're okay.
Yeah, I guess so. Pete! Look at the water of the lagoon.
Holy smoke! Why, being churned up as though there were a dozen whales out there.
Could it be whales?
Not in these waters.
Pete, there's something enormous out there threshing around.
Well, maybe it'll break through to the surface and we'll be able to see it.
Could it be that monster crab we saw last night?
Oh, it's something bigger, much bigger.
Bigger? Well, that would make whatever it is a couple hundred feet in length.
Yeah. The way the water's being churned up, there must be a fight going on out there.
Water.
The monster crab we saw last night.
And another one following.
And still others. Dan, some of them are coming this way. Come on, we've got to get out of here.
What about our supplies?
There's no time to grab them. Get a move on. This way.
There were dozens of them coming out of the water.
Well, they came out of the lagoon. They were fleeing the fight that was going on out there.
Whatever it is, it's in the lagoon. I never want to see it.
Well, it must be the side of the destroyer.
Where are we running to, Pete? I'm getting bushed.
Oh, let's stop for a minute. Get our bearings, huh?
Yeah. Do you hear that?
Yeah. Those monster crabs. There must be dozens of them.
overrunning the island. Look. The moon's getting behind the clouds.
No, just our luck. Can't see much now.
Those crabs. It sounds like they're all over the place.
Yeah.
Maybe we better push on.
No, we might run into one in the dark. We're better off staying here.
One of them seems to be heading this way.
Can you make out from which direction it's coming?
No. The moon had come out from behind those clouds.
Hey, listen. It's coming closer.
What are you doing with that 45?
It's better than nothing. Maybe the sound of shots might frighten it off.
It's getting closer all the time. But I can't see it. Can you?
No. Keep your eyes open. Sounds almost on top of us.
Pete! There it is! Look out! No! No! Pete! Pete!
Right near the claw. As it ran fast. My chest.
Oh, lie quietly. Hey, let me look. Good Lord.
The open.
Don't move, Pete. I'm going back to the beach for medical supplies.
No, don't. No, it's too dangerous. It's no use, anyway.
No use?
I'm dying.
No, Pete.
Oh, listen to me. You know,
first thing in the morning, if Raft is still okay, you shove off. Don't stay here. Too dangerous.
Pete, let me go for the medical supplies.
No. When you're rescued, explain to them. Strange new world. Sea life. Multiplying hundredfold. Radioactivity. Of atomic bomb. And lagoon. Sea life will increase.
Overrun.
Seven seas.
Pete.
I sat there beside Pete's body for the rest of the night. Several times I heard monster crabs passing in the brush nearby, but I didn't leave. In the morning, Alan was once again peaceful, tranquil. I buried Pete on a high hill and then returned to the beach. The raft was overturned, the supplies gone. I overhauled the raft, gathered coconuts and a supply of water. By noon, I was paddling across the 3-mile lagoon to the channel through the reefs that led to sea. As dusk came, I was several miles out to sea. Two nights and days slipped by without my seeing a plane or ship. And more days. Soon my water was gone. The days that followed were ones of thirst and torture. The will to live left me, and I lost consciousness. The next thing I remember was feeling hands lift me and finding myself here. Where did you say I am?
His Majesty's ship. Submarine Valiant.
Submarine Valiant?
Yes.
Where did you pick me up?
50 miles southeast of the island of Bikini.
Bikini? Bikini.
Now you must lie back. Rest. What you need is sleep. That's it. Close your eyes.
That's it, lad. He's fallen asleep, sir.
Yes. Poor devil.
Did you catch his ravings about monsters and all that, sir?
Yes. Poor chap is clearly out of his mind.
Must be, sir. Yet his ravings gives the one the chills, they do.
It's quite so. Devil, take it.
What happened, sir?
Feels as if we've hit a derelict. Carry on, Higgins.
Aye, aye, sir.
What was that?
Well, woke you up, did it? Too bad. Well, we may have hit a derelict. It's hard to say. A captain's looking into it. Now, rest easy, lad.
Ah, me, what now?
Being tossed about like a ball.
Monsters, Mickey. I try
dragging us down. Oh,
nonsense, lad. I just slide back and leave everything.
Now hear this. Captain Farnsworth speaking. We're being attacked by some creature of the deep. All crew members to battle stations.
This is the Mysterious Traveler again. Did you enjoy our trip? Or what happened to the submarine Valiant? Well, after a two-hour battle with an unseen enemy, it managed to escape. But at a naval court of inquiry, Captain Farnsworth was at a loss to explain the nature of the enemy his submarine had been in battle with. Well, of course, there was Lieutenant Dan Walker's testimony, but obviously the poor fellow was out of his head. Who ever heard of monster crabs 20 feet high and denizens of the deep as large as a destroyer? The court could reach no verdict in the matter of the submarine Valiant, and there the case rested. Now, if by some chance you should happen to take a voyage across the Pacific, and one night as you stroll on deck, you see Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
The Mysterious Traveler, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 19th, 1952 on the Mutual Broadcasting System, bringing to an end this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. It's been a pleasure.